You're listening to Sci-Fi for Chicks on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
My name is Liv Moore, and I died, sort of. I had a promising career and a great fiancé. Then I went to the world's worst boat party and got turned into a zombie. Now I work at the morgue for access to brains, but brain eating has side effects. I take on the victim's personality traits and have visions which I use to help solve their murders. I work with a detective who thinks I'm a psychic, and my boss, the medical examiner, the only person who knows my secret. I'm a crime-fighting zombie.
Welcome to Sci-Fi for Chicks as we talk a little iZombie here. Season 1, Episode 12, Dead Rat, Live Rat, Brown Rat, White Rat. The thing I don't like about that entire part that I just said was it's Episode 12, which means it's the penultimate episode, which means we only have one more episode left of the season, and I'm actually finding myself quite sad about this. Hi, my name's Heather, and I'm joined by my partner in crime, Alex.
Hello, everybody.
What do you think, Alex?
Well, I just caught all the rats, and that's probably how the episode post is going to be called, the one with all the rats, or something like that, because listing all the rats is going to get tired.
Dead, live, brown, white.
Yeah, if you say
dead,
so.
Dead, live, brown, rat.
Hope died. Do you understand this? It's such a great
The Guide
metaphor.
To Rats. It's like a zombie kids book. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's pretty funny. Yeah, like I said, this is the penultimate episode. We only have one more episode left this season, Alex.
And then I'm going to have to wait a year. Or, I don't know, if it's coming back October, maybe? I don't know. I haven't checked CW's schedule for the fall. And it kills me. And I don't know when it's coming back. And I don't know how long I'm going to have to wait for more. And it's such a great show, and I want it back already. Apparently, I have to give them time to, like, shoot new stuff. Like, what it is about. Come on, give me more.
Before we get into the episode, I kind of want to let you know here, Alex. Mm-hmm. This past weekend, Doreen and I went to the Dallas Comic-Con Fan Expo. Ooh. And we were only there one day, unfortunately, because of the way our schedules worked out. But we did get to have some fun. We did see Drew Powell and Robin Lord Taylor of Gotham. And I will tell you that seeing them and talking with Butch himself at the Drew Powell makes me go, we might actually have to watch the show again come fall. Because he was just so nice. He's just so ding darn nice. And so is Robin. That I'm positive. I'm feeling positive and hopeful about Gotham again.
Oh God.
Sorry, Alex. So we might be there. But somebody else that we did meet, because Doreen is a big Walking Dead fan, has this really cool poster that she's getting everybody to sign, was Scott Wilson, who played Herschel on The Walking Dead. So we met him. Very courteous guy. Very nice. Looks very much like a cleaned up Herschel. I mean, he wasn't all dirty and disgusting like many times on the show. Here's the reason I bring it up, because we're talking about a zombie show here, iZombie.
Yeah.
And he was on a zombie show, Walking Dead. He was a zombie. Granted, it was just his head
for a second
before they put him out of his misery, but he did become a zombie. He is going to be on a new show this fall that you have mentioned, that you are interested in, said that we need to watch, that is also going to star another former zombie who happened to be a former zombie on the show that we're about to talk about. Scott Wilson will be starring with Bradley James on Damien.
Okay, fine. I will have to watch this show. Damn you. Damn you. Oh, the sacrifices I
think it's funny that two former zombies are now, you know, two of the undead are now moving into, you know, the demonically possessed. We're going from undead to demons. It's going to be interesting. So any of you that are Walking Dead, that are zombie fans, Walking Dead or iZombie, you're going to have two former zombies on Damien.
It's something to look forward to, definitely.
Definitely. But we're here to talk about iZombie.
Yes.
And Liv, and Ravi, and Clive, and Major, and Blaine, who the name doesn't sound so bad to me anymore. I guess it only took 12 episodes.
Yeah, 12 weeks, and we finally start saying his name without, following.
We start, as we always do, talking about the title cards. That keeps it kind of in that comic vein there. You have, But I'm a Cheerleader. It's okay, but I mean, it did fit the section it was on. Band on the Run, a little shout out there to Wings. The Day the Music Died, we're definitely keeping in the band here. Guess Who's Coming to Dinner was one of them in there as well. And I have to admit, I really like this one. Stoner, I hardly knew her.
That was a particularly good one. I like the entire, all the themes here. The person who wrote title cards and then, unfortunately, went on vacation, is definitely back, and they are giving this person the good stuff to smoke.
We're going to end with my two favorites, even though I really do love the Stoner, I hardly knew her. But the two that were at the beginning that are going to get us into the crime, which are Remains of the Day. I love that because I love that movie. And for them to just totally turn this really awesome, deep thinking movie into something about zombies is awesome. And of course, the question that we all ask, why did the zombie cross the road?
I think out of all of them, that particular title card was one that I laughed at the hardest.
I would love to see some hashtags out there. Why did the zombie cross the road? I think you need to give us some answers to this riddle out there. You can do that over on Twitter at Sci-Fi for Chicks. Or if you're not into social media, you can also call us on our hotline, 573-427-2434. That's 573-42-SCI-FI. Or email us, scififorchicks@scififorme.com.
Nice! And I don't know if you guys will believe me, but this was not scripted.
I'm doing these actually pretty much on the fly now. But I really would like to know, what are some of your answers for why did the zombie cross the road? No, to get to the other side. That's the only one that you can't do. But I think that would be pretty hilarious. I want to know, why did the zombie cross the road? Why did this zombie cross the road? Because we have... A lot of times I don't like it when they do this, but I'm actually glad that they did this because they set it up where, again, we have an old murder because Sebastian was not just last episode. This whole thing was not just a day or two ago. We have the setup at the beginning of these kids hitting and what they think killing this man that we later find out, not that much later, is Sebastian, so we know he's evil, bad zombie guy. But then we have 2 weeks later. So it sets up that all of this happened. Sebastian has been out there for a while, which I like because it makes it a little more menacing of what's going on. What did you think about how they brought Sebastian back into this and how he's been out there and our I Know What You Did Last Summer?
Yeah. Well, at first I kind of wondered situation. When I saw the 2 weeks later, I had to wonder how did he survive and remained himself? Because Liv and every other zombie that we know is getting the brains on a regular basis. Right? And so far, we know Sebastian killing 3 people? 2 people? 2 people for brains and 1 person because of reasons.
Well, but I think that falls into the realm of what we've kind of seen, like maybe how long it lasts. Yeah. I mean, he did get the brain right there with the cheerleader, with Kimber. Kimber. So he had that. And we have the explanation later on. With poor Aunt Edna.
But honestly, what I really loved was the before 2 weeks, because that was straight up, I Know What You Did Last Summer, homage, and it was perfect. I loved every single thing about it. I don't remember her name, but the brunette that was on Arrow, she was
Teresa.
Yeah.
Teresa.
She was absolutely brilliant. I loved the interactions between the all the characters. That, oh my god, we killed a guy. Come on, touch him. And what? Leave my DNA all over him? No thank you. It was just so brilliant and in a way updated. You know, I Know What You Did Last Summer, version 2015. and I bought into it. It was so amazing. And then 2 weeks later, and we finally see the, you know, results.
Something I think is really funny is how the shows that we watch keep seeming to echo each other and having a similar scene or a similar something that happens in each of them. The dog finding the cheerleader wasn't a reference to another show that we're watching, but the premiere the night before of one of my guilty pleasure TV shows, Devious Maids. Exact same thing. A dog just like that finds the parts of the dead body. And I'm just laughing, going, okay, I guess it's just that time of the week. Is it, you know, that time of the month for a dog, a golden retriever, to find body parts and open up a mystery?
In a way, it's one of the tropes where a dog finds a body. It's fairly common and used in every single procedural at one point or another. And I can't even call it lazy writing, because it's a means to an end.
And the dog is cute. It's a cute little puppy.
Yes, especially with a food in his mouth. Yeah, that's cute. That's cute.
It was a good intro, and I like the fact, I think the thing I do like about the fact that this is 2 weeks later is this is a crime that happened two weeks ago. Crimes are not just happening one at a time so that Liv and Ravi and Clive attach them. You know, we still have all of those references, you know, how she's like, I don't want to be, you know, orange is not the new black. She doesn't want that. Kimber saying a little line there. I'm thinking that this is very much how not to get away with murder. When Sebastian comes back to life and shows it. So it was a good way to bring Sebastian back, but not making him a permanent baddie, as we see at the end. That he has his contained storyline, which I'm glad, because he was just a little too psycho.
Yeah.
For my taste, to stick around.
We already established, I think, last time we talked about him, that he was not right in the head. Like, there was a little sociopath, even psychopath, in there, just waiting to be turned into a zombie.
Mm-hmm.
But I gotta tell you, speaking of Sebastian, I really like the makeup they've done on him.
Mm-hmm.
Because they kept the hair, as is, you know, customary on this show. But I liked how the deep gashes from the boat stayed on in form of those really, really, you know, visible scars. Like, you could tell what happens. And it actually answered one of the questions that I didn't ask on the podcast before, but one that I've been asking myself for some time now. What happens when a zombie gets hurt? Because we've seen Liv get hurt, right? And we assume she heals because she eats the brains and everything else. But what happens? And apparently she has scars, and Lieutenant Suzuki, after being shot in the stomach or whatever, lower abdomen area, also probably has a scar around the bullet that no doubt is still there. Anyway, let's go back to the topic. That's me wondering about stuff.
But those were pretty deep ones, too, so maybe it takes longer for some of them to heal if it's, you know, because, come on, those were propeller blades that were going across his face.
And I still think that it should have, you know, damaged his brain enough for him not to turn into a zombie. Because you've seen those scars. They were going all around from the forehead to the back of the skull. And I keep wondering, how on earth did he survive? You know, how on earth did he manage to be turned into a zombie? But hey, I liked what he did in the episode, how they used him. So I'm not going to bitch too much.
Maybe because he was infected before. I don't know, you know, because he was still a human when he was infected with her blood. So maybe something.
I could buy that.
Could be. I thought the thing that was interesting in this was, like I said, the time that we know this one is taken, the people that we have in there, the way we think we know what's going on and what's happening, even if they don't. I like the fact that with this time passage and with what we see and what we know, we think we have the ends on what's really going on, because we start with this crime where we do see Sebastian kill Kimber.
Mm.
Kimber. It's just a cute little cheerleader name.
What happened Kimber. To Lee? There should Kimber. Be Kimber Lee.
It's Kimber. So we see that, and we know it's him. And we see our Scooby gang on this whole thing. I mean, Ravi going, pulling Liv aside. No, this is a zombie killing. The brains are gone. So we've got this track, and she's figuring out where it is. And Clive is going on all of these hints. And when she gets on the zombie brain, the two different brains.
Yeah.
Which I thought was interesting. We're going to talk about that in a second. But how we have these two brains back and forth, and Clive dealing with her on these two different brains and what's going on, and the flashes were but weren't really part of it, but he was still sleuthing and she was sleuthing, and we're on this track. We find out about the asshats. I'm not cursing. That's the name of the band. And they go and they do this whole sleuthing thing, and we think we're on this track, and then they discover Nate's dead, and we're like, it's Sebastian, but they don't know that, but Liv kind of knows it, because then she sees the sketch artist drawing, oh my god, it's Sebastian, Ravi, look, it's this, it's,
I made him,
know, I made this,
yeah.
I made this zombie, guilt. We think we know where this whole thing is going, and we are going to talk more about some of this other stuff later, but later on we find Sebastian dead, and yet Teresa, the chick in the band, who the detail is now off, hey, you know, don't worry about it. Tell her that she's safe now. She doesn't have to worry about, you know, I know what you did last summer and I know I'm next, kind of thing. So she now feels safe, or they think she's safe, and she gets this text from Cameron, the other surviving member of the band, surviving in quotes, and goes to see him, and we have that end where she goes into the hotel room. Never go into a hotel room like that. And the door suddenly closes. I don't think she knew at the time that they had caught Sebastian.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really matter. We knew at the time Sebastian's dead, yet she's in peril. And we see her at the end all bloody and crawling towards the phone for 911. At the same time, again, we'll talk about more of this later, the same time we also know Blaine is busy dealing with other things. So we know it's not Sebastian. We know it's not Blaine.
My current theory...
But we have a crime.
My current theory is that it's Cameron. That Sebastian turned him into a zombie. Maybe unintentionally, the way Liv turned him. Maybe he wanted to see what would happen. I don't know. You know, one of those things. And what's going to happen if I press the red button? Maybe. But my current theory is that it's Cameron, and that it's him being desperate for a brain. I might be proven wrong if there are other, you know, villains in play. But right now, what I think is happening is Cameron trying to kill Teresa, because, you know, brains.
Well, but interesting, but why then... Do we see spatters of blood just a little bit on the pillow when she opens the door, and the door closes behind her, and she's, I mean, I don't mean this in a belittling sense, is she scrappy enough that she could fight off a zombie that wants brains long enough to bloodily crawl across the floor and dial 911?
Well, I've seen her on Arrow, so I know she can. I know it's completely off topic, but... Yeah, she's awesome enough. She's awesome enough to be able to pull it off. Plus, if she didn't, we wouldn't get the awesome end shot of her trying to call 911. So, you know.
It's not trying. She did. 911. Fade to black. 911. What is your emergency? Which I thought was a great way to end this, because it does so set it up that this is not something that is going to be a 2 weeks later.
Yeah.
This is a landline, because she's actually dialing this on a landline, so they're going to be able to track it. It's not like a cell phone that you then have to do tower pinging and hope all this, you know, hope it does. They're going to find her. So it is interesting. I'm curious where this is going to go. Because like I said, it's not Sebastian, and it's not Blaine. So, yeah, we have some new baddie. So what I thought was cool about this was the crime really was contained in this episode, but it also wasn't.
Mm.
It started before, and it's continuing after.
Oh, yeah.
And that's something, a little bit of a twist on that whole procedural thing that I do like, where it's not just so nice and neat, like I was saying before. It's not like as soon as one crime is solved, the next one starts, that we're having these overlaps, that things happen outside of the episode. So that I thought was interesting. It's an interesting thought. We'll have to see if it is Cameron as zombie Cameron or someone else.
We'll see.
I don't know. This is
the interesting thing about iZombie. I don't need to know to be excited. I see all the possibilities, and it's enough. Because even if my expectations are high, these past 12 weeks have taught me that I'm not going to be disappointed. And therefore, the season finale is going to rock hard.
And they're staying very true to a lot of the things that they're laying down and finding new ways to bring it about. Let's kind of backtrack a little bit and talk a little bit about Clive and Liv. Liv is, like I was saying, going back and forth between cheerleader brain.
And stoner.
Which was adorable.
I know!
And stoner brain, which was also adorable in its own way. And Clive, who is, I think, is interesting because he's got this thing where he's got to try and work with her on the brain. But she's going back and forth. I mean, it's throwing him off. The looks that Malcolm was giving throughout this whole episode, these glares and looks and okay, kind of looks to Liv throughout the whole thing, were just so perfect and icing on top, especially in that scene when they bring in Kimber's best friend and Liv is on Kimber's brain and they're talking. That, I mean, talking to two Valley Girl type cheerleaders with Malcolm and Clive sitting there was priceless.
It was brilliant. And the way I love, what I loved the most was the way Liv's voice went up when she was on cheerleader brain. And it was so surreal. It was like a completely different person. Like, I know that Rose is incredibly talented. We've seen her do some incredible changes, but, and maybe that's weird, but I didn't know how drastic her changes could be until she went full-on cheerleader, you know, be aggressive.
Totes!
Yeah. Totes! And her voice.
Kimber was just a big ball of awesome!
And her voice and her, you know, cheery demeanor and, if I was Clive, I would be seriously freaked out. Because Liv is not a cheerful person. That is not her. That is not the experience that Clive has. And I loved watching him be slightly worried, you know, put off what is going on. I'm pretty sure that if he wasn't used to her acting weird all the time, he would be asking what it is that she's taking. Like, what are those meds, and do you have a prescription for them?
The looks he was giving is so kind of like that father looking at his daughter, who is now doing that total teenage girl speak in front of him, and I have no idea what you're talking about and what's going on. It was really priceless because here's his partner that is now so totally different and then swings to total stoner.
Yeah.
You know, it's just back and forth, and you know, her going from "you are so awesome at this" when he's figuring out different little things, you know, he's putting pieces together, to her just It was really brilliant, and it was interesting seeing her going back and forth between these two brains, because usually we just see her on one for that episode, or see her transitioning from one to the other. And here we've got her vacillating back and forth, and we see her, the effects of what the brain does with both her and Clive, and her and Ravi, and her and Peyton. she's interacting with all these people and how those different personalities affect her being with people. Ravi, too, was just, I think he was ready to smack her upside the head. You know, stop being like this, you know, snap out of it kind of thing. Whereas Peyton was really enjoying the blatantly girly time. And Clive is just totally confounded by what's going on. It was interesting. And I think that the thing that caught me was the longer she's on brains, and I don't mean a brain. I don't mean like the cheerleader brain or the stoner brain or the whatever. But the longer that she's doing this, it really seems like over the last few episodes, she's losing herself a little bit more when she's on these brains. It started out where you could see where it would suddenly flare up, but then she'd kind of be more live and normal. And these brains, it seemed, the last few brains have really seemed to take her over more.
Yeah.
Where it seems harder to see live. And I don't know if that's the effect of the brain, if that's the effect of how long she's been a zombie and been having to do this, if it's her immersing herself so much to try and solve these murderers and such. But she really did seem to be more affected by these. I mean, like when she's on the stoner brain and eating the cheesy puff things with the French onion, and she's just totally, this is the mouse and the cat, la, 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 la. And then it's like, oh my, I've got to get off this brain. And so she has to switch into this. She seems to be more totally engrossed in these brains now.
I think you're right. I think she's embracing it a little more, and therefore she's allowing the changes to be there. At the beginning, it was like, oh my god, I have to eat this brain, and I don't want to, even though I have to, because it's going to be helpful. So I think at the beginning she was fighting the brains in a way that she only got what she needed, and now she wants those, because she wants those informations and everything that comes with it.
I don't know, though, if she's so much wanting it as it's, I'm wondering if it's actually tearing her down more, and it's becoming, she's more susceptible to it. That she almost doesn't realize. To me, it's almost like she doesn't realize how deep she's going into some of these, how easy it is for her. Almost like a drug. Almost like this is this drug that she's easily going into it. I mean, you even see Clive saying things like, don't go so method. You're really into this whole thing with Hottie McBody, and she would have let me curl her hair, blah, blah, blah. Yet don't go so method. He's starting to see how deep she's going into these. I don't know if it's a voluntary thing on her part that she's letting it happen. Mm-hmm. I almost think that she doesn't realize how deep she's getting into these brains.
Either way, I'm pretty sure...
It's just so weird to talk about.
Either way, I'm pretty sure that is what's going to tell Clive what's going on. I'm pretty sure that if he's supposed to, you know, connect the dots, Liv's behavior is going to be what clues him in on, hey, maybe, you know, maybe the psychic thing is not actually a psychic thing. Maybe it's something else. And I'm okay with it. Because we already established that out of everybody else, Clive is going to be the one who connects the dots by himself.
Maybe it's because of the mushrooms. Oh, when he ate that pizza with the brains, I'm like, oh my goodness. Are there mushrooms on this? I don't really like mushrooms.
That was kind of disgusting. And even though intellectually I knew that those are marshmallows, you know, or something, or jelly beans, whatever. I knew it was brain, right? But when he ate it, I went like, oh. Just shoot me now. That was disgusting.
The thing you listeners don't know is right as I was saying that, so that's right when she's taking a drink of something. And I think she was... I'm surprised you were able to keep it.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. I wasn't planning it. I didn't plan it.
Right.
I did not plan it.
Okay. If you say so.
Something that was planned was Ravi testing all these rats to try and turn Hope, the zombie rat, who was not a zombie rat anymore. He cured her. Yay! To try and cure Liv. Aww. Hope died.
How appropriate. And that is one of the best metaphors ever. You know, there's a saying that the hope always dies last. You know? And it was such a great metaphor. And in a way, it was extremely ironic that he, you know, named the rat Hope. And then the hope died. And he managed to buy Hope a wheel, a hamster wheel, and it was so adorable. And I wanted to hug Ravi so much when he noticed that the rat is dead. And it was such a sad, sad storyline. But hey, he does not give up.
He's still optimistic. Yeah, we still have enough for one more test. And looking ahead a little bit, what I've seen from next week's episode and some of the things they've said, I don't know if this was a we called or an I called. I think him saying that he has enough for one more. I think he is going to be able to come up with the cure. He just has to lower the dosage, not make it quite so hardcore.
Yeah.
And she's going to have to make that decision about whether or not she stays zombie or is cured.
Since the show has been picked up for second season, spoilers, she will remain a zombie. However,
yeah.
I'm more...
I'm not so much a zombie anymore.
Yeah, no, but I'm pretty sure that the way we called it last week, I think, it's going to happen like
that. Oh, before that.
Yeah.
Well, before that.
Somebody is going to be turned into a zombie, and she's going to use that cure that she wanted for herself, for that person. Right now, Peyton and Major and Clive are in the top, you know, running.
But wasn't it so cute how Ravi is just so happy about Hope? He brings her a little toy because he's worried she's bored. Aww.
It was.
He's so sweet.
Ravi is awesome. He's such a...
Ravi is always awesome because Ravi rocks. The thing I loved seeing too was we have Ravi still being his very Ravi ally supportive self, but we've also learned since the last episode happened that things have progressed between him and Peyton because he says at the crime that night, you know, well, he says, you know, Peyton and I are going to San Francisco. Now, this is supposed to take place in Seattle, so you're talking, you know, a couple hour and a half or so plane ride down there. But Ravi and Peyton are going away.
I know.
And not just for a date. This has got, you know, you're going to San Francisco. This is still a pretty hefty kind of
this is
trip
a
there.
Bigger
so
trip.
They're going away for like a weekend. You go, Ravi. That was such a sweet thing. I love that, you know, he's actually... that things are progressing there, that we're not staying in this whole friend zone thing, that she sees this in him. Like when her and Peyton and Liv are talking about that, and she talks about Ravi, how he's like that confident geek. He has that geekiness to him, but he's got this confidence, and you can see that she sees in him things that we're seeing in him.
Yeah.
And it's nice that Ravi is able to progress as well, not just as a zombie cure.
As a sidekick, but also
as
a hero of his own story. And it's really nice to watch. Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing where they go with that relationship next episode. Because things got complicated.
And him even asking her about, asking Liv, you know, how Peyton is such a big Vertigo fan, which is an awesome movie if you haven't seen it.
A Major.
Jimmy Stewart.
He was asking Major that.
Awesome, awesome movie. How he wants to, when he's talking with Major about how he wants to do all these little things. Is it creepy that I want to do this? I want to take her to these places, and she loves this, and we're going to go visit all these places in San Francisco where the movie takes place, and what if I dress like Jimmy Stewart? Is that too much? And it was really sweet to see that he's got this confidence, but he's also, you know, giddy about it.
Yeah.
It was so nice.
It was. And I gotta agree, because when Major asks Ravi whether or not Ravi looks good in that suit, and Ravi goes, oh yeah. And then when we see him at the end of the episode in that suit,
good.
I was like, oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, you can...
He looks good.
I hate walking and I hate sightseeing, but honey, you can take me on a trip to sightsee the movie that I don't care about. Yep.
What do you mean don't care about? It's an awesome movie. Awesome movie.
Well, I'm going to watch it if Ravi is dressed like that. I'm going to watch.
Ravi continues to have these really great relationships. I loved him and Major talking about this banter they have. Raoul and Robert have this really great bro chemistry about them that I just feel so at ease watching them. I mean, you know, even with the whole, is it lump related? Let's say, you know, the way they're bantering back and forth. What kind of questions do people usually ask you? It is so great how they have this irreverent banter towards each other, but you can also see they really care about each other. Yeah. And it's this respect, I think, that they're really treating all of the characters with. And Ravi would be one of those characters that they could easily neglect and not make him anything really deep. And he could just be the ally doctor.
He could be the science monkey, basically.
Yeah. Something I would love to see after this Comic-Con that I went to this past weekend, had a really great panel, like I said, with Drew Powell and Robin Lord Taylor of Gotham. I really want to see, and I'm throwing this out to you, Dallas Comic-Con, because we have three of those a year down here, and those are the ones I'd go to, so I don't care if you do it at other ones. Don't just do it at San Diego Comic-Con. I want a panel with Major and Ravi. I want to see those two up together and talking and giving some behind-the-scenes insight, because the way they are on screen just makes me think how awesome all of this would be off-screen, what they could contribute. I want to see that. So Dallas Comic Con, give me what I ask for.
Subtle, yeah.
By golly. It's, the way they're integrating everybody is so great. And seeing how Ravi is with Liv when she's on the brain, seeing how Ravi is about Peyton, so excited, a little nervous, but confident. Seeing how Liv is with Peyton.
Girly.
It was nice to finally see the roommate friends together.
Yeah.
Again.
It was. Though, once again, I'm a little disappointed that it took a brain for them to reconnect on that level. But you're probably right. You were right when you said weeks ago, I think, that it helps Liv put things in perspective. Like, cheerleader brain helped her connect with Peyton on a level that they forgot they had, in a way.
Right.
And it happens sometimes.
Well, they did have that 5 months of disconnect right after she became a zombie.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're still feeling their way back to being besties.
And, hey, they had an evening of that before, you know, something hit the fan.
Well, they got the chance to be, like she said, blatantly girly. That was really nice to see them bantering back and forth, you know, that she could so win the Olivia Moore game show.
Yeah.
And you know, I know Peyton Charles trivia, and going back and forth. And where you got to see the fact that these two women are friends, that they're not just roomies, that they really are friends and care about each other. And I think it was unfortunately very important that they set that up in this episode.
Yeah.
That they were close, because out of left field, I was not expecting. Here we are theorizing Clive's going to figure it out, or Major is suddenly going to be thrust into this. I mean, Major is walking along that fine line between, you know, what his knowledge is as he's clicking that, yeah, zombies do exist. He just doesn't quite click that Liv's one of them yet.
Yeah.
And Clive has been walking that line too. I did not expect at all that the first one in the Scooby gang and Liv's group of people to find out about Liv was going to be Peyton.
I know. It shocked me. Because out of everybody, Peyton, to be perfectly honest, even though I'm not being fair to her, Peyton wasn't even on the list when I was wondering who's going to find out.
And I think part of that is because we've been worried that Peyton wasn't going to be anything more than an occasional character, since she's not one of the main cast members. She's guest starring kind of thing. And that's something we talked about way early on, how we really wanted her to be this important. We needed more important female characters. Yeah, it can't just be now she's important. And all the guys. Yeah. And I think it's interesting that this character that we didn't expect much of, not because of her or her character, but because of where she was placed, is the first one that gets hit in the face with what Liv is.
Yeah. In the end, even though she wasn't in the running, basically, in the end, I gotta say, I agree with the choice the writers made. Because this episode made me think that, yeah, out of everybody who would find out, sure, Liv is, you know, really affected by the fact that Major wants to kill all the zombies, her included, probably. But it's Peyton's reaction. Peyton's leaving the apartment as fast as possibly, you know, possible, that hit her more than, you know, more than killing Sebastian, more than anything else. Because, and I think in a way, I know that we got that roommate besties moment in this episode so that it would feel more emotional to us in the end. But I think because of that moment that they got to be best friends is why Liv was hit with it even harder.
Mm-hmm.
Because she got reminded how good they were. How, you know, how it felt to be best friends with Peyton. And then it got, you know, thrown away from
her. It makes me wonder, and I want to go back and watch the scene again, how long Peyton actually saw this for. Now, when we first see that Sebastian's there, it's very ominous for Peyton. And my first thought was, you know, when the whole mirror thing is she's getting ready for meeting up with Ravi, I'm first worried. She's not a major character.
So she can die. Yet. Yeah, she can die. Basically.
So are we about to kill her? I was about to, you know, I'm worried. And then we see her laying there and her head's bloody. And I'm thinking, okay, it all it took with Sebastian was a taste of Liv's blood for him to now be a zombie. So I'm worried about Peyton now. Is she, those are the first places I was going.
Yeah.
Was, is Peyton going to get killed? Is Peyton now going to be a zombie? And we have zombie roommates and it's a whole new kind of wacky Three's Company kind of thing, you know? But then when Liv comes in and is confronting him and, you know, is threatening him and is protecting Peyton, and Liv says the line, which I think is really great. Funny. I've never eaten anyone I didn't want to eat when Sebastian's talking about Aunt Edna and how what Liv has turned him into killed the woman who raised him, basically. How he couldn't control himself, how he was so hungry. So he's talking about this and she's talking about how she's never eaten anyone I didn't want to eat. Mm. And they both go on full on zombie mode, rage fighting. When did Peyton wake up? How much of this did she see? Was it just the eyes? Did she overhear any of this? You know, it kind of raises the bar even more. It's not just the ending.
Yeah.
It's not just the knife going through the hand and then her doing the hand into his brain and all that kind of thing. How much did she actually hear? And how much would that freak you out if you overheard any of this? If you saw this, your best friend roommate's eyes or that red. And when she says, "What are you?" Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Just knife to the heart because she realizes something's different. And it's not her friend is raging out to protect her. It's her friend is maybe something she doesn't know. It was...
Maybe her friend isn't even there.
Exactly.
Because that's one of the aspects of transformation, of change, that is always explored in supernatural, you know, TV. If you change into a zombie, into a werewolf, into a vampire, do you remain the same? Are you the same person, or are you a monster wearing my friend's face? That's one of the aspects that are often, you know, explored early on. And I hate the exercises of what is the character thinking, or what was the author thinking when he or she wrote something. But you gotta wonder whether or not those questions went through Peyton's head. You know, is she asking herself, is Liv even there? Is it just a zombie rage monster wearing Liv's face? This isn't something that I feel they can address well enough in one episode that they have left.
No.
So I'm thinking, I might be wrong, but I'm thinking that we're not going to see much of Peyton in the finale, and it's going to be something they explore in season two.
I don't think we're going to see Peyton at all
yeah.
in the finale. I think she's...
A call to Ravi, maybe.
Rightfully gone, yeah. Because, I mean, the explanation, us watching Liv over all these episodes... How she explained it was totally rational and the right amount of information that Liv needed to share.
Yeah.
But then you put yourself in Peyton's shoes.
Yeah.
She's not even at a major point where she thinks that zombies do exist and, oh, now this person I know is one of them. Major thinks that zombies are monsters. She had no idea they existed except in things like Zombie High.
Yeah.
You know, TV show. Ha 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 ha. And to have this totally hit her and learn all of this. She's been living with this woman for 6+ months now because she knows when it happens. She says when it happened, and all this time they've been together, and oh my God, what are you? And you know, at some point in her head, you know, you're hoping that maybe she grabs the suitcase and she does go to Ravi. At some point after she walks out the door, you know, somewhere in her head she's going, but Ravi's been working her with her all this time. Does Ravi know? So I don't have a safe place there either.
Yeah.
You know, she's this lone island, and Liv is worried because she's worried about her friend. Her friend now knows. Who is her friend going to tell? Is her friend in danger? Is she going to go to Major? Is she going to do this? She has no idea what's going on. And we have that beautiful moment where Clive comes in and is like, if it were your body in that body bag, you know, that would be the tragedy. Yeah. Don't worry about killing this guy that broke in and tried to hurt you and Peyton. You know, he's being all nice. But he's saying that would be the tragedy if it were you. But she knows what the ramifications are now.
Yeah.
Peyton knows, and Peyton's out there, and Peyton could be in trouble. And she did this. I think this is very much the I did this episode. I created this zombie. I'm the one that's doing this to my friends.
Yeah.
It's going to make an interesting dynamic for the finale.
Definitely. Definitely. Well, everything about the finale is going to be interesting, because everything that wasn't neatly wrapped up here is going to be definitely exploding next step.
I think the finale is going to really be Major. I'm not really using that as a pun.
Nice.
I want to move into the Major storyline right now, because he is that, like you were saying earlier when we were off mic, how he's this like lone island story. He's continuing on with himself. Even he has these moments of connecting back to Ravi, of connecting back to Liv, of connecting with whoever. But he really is the lone wolf. That moment at the beginning when he's making his goodbye video.
Yeah.
If you're watching this, I'm dead. I'm like, oh, I don't like that. But it shows how committed he is to what he's doing and where he puts himself into these various places and where he's willing to go to find out what's really going on. It's moved so far past just Jerome and Jerome's friend.
Yeah.
It's a life mission for him now. And he's got this, I forget how I put it, but he's got this nervous confidence or confident nervousness when he's pretending to be the health inspector.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wouldn't have caught, if I were on the outside, I don't think I would have caught at all that he was being put in a position where he had to come up with things on the fly. He seemed totally confident. But you know, knowing Major and you know the situation that he's in, even if he's not 100% sure, he knows what meet cute really is.
Yeah.
And you know he's having to work all these things out on the fly. To have him and Blaine face to face was very nerve-wracking.
Oh, yeah. I had my heart in my throat. Like, no, 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 no. Why am I watching this again? Why am I doing this to myself? I do not want to be a nervous wreck when watching a zombie TV series. This is not The Walking Dead. I should not be worried about what's going on. But I was. I was because Major is, you know, it's going to be all about him in the finale. That's for sure.
Yeah. He's actually making really great strides in what he's doing, but very much like on Orphan Black, he needs a backup.
Oh, yeah.
He needs somebody that is watching out for him, because when he's doing that stakeout, you know, oh, great, as the lights come up.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, what is this? And we flash to the end where he's tied up because Julian has connected a few dots from what Blaine has said about this health inspector
What's
going on. That is not the kind of way I want to see Major tied up.
Yeah. Well, it is exactly how want to see Major
tied
up.
This is a CW show. Alex, you promised me a CW show. He's tied up. Why is his shirt still on?
Because Blaine doesn't swing that way, apparently. Which is a loss, because, you know.
We do have his shirt. I don't know if you caught this. It's Helton Shelter is the shirt he's wearing. And I'm like, Helter Skelter? Is this very much like this? And we have the writers, producers, creators of the show are obviously Jimmy Stewart fans. Because we also have The Guy Who Knows Too Much and Vertigo and all the, you know, Harvey, all these Jimmy Stewart references throughout the whole thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, The Guy Who Knows Too Much. You don't want Blaine to know that you know too much.
Yeah, no. Out of all the characters on the show, Blaine should be the one thinking the least of you.
Yeah.
That minion that got a knife in his throat. Yeah. Blaine isn't thinking much of him.
I do like that he kept whispering, yeah, I'm still looking. I'm still. So that kind of goes also with your whole thing about
healing
damage.
Yeah.
You know, like Sebastian, how getting cut, our doofus minion there got the knife in the throat. And obviously it's affected his voice box because he's having trouble talking.
And it was awesome.
Nice little repercussions or ramifications.
I like continuity. This was awesome, actually.
Yeah. So we have Julian that has found Major. It's the next best thing to finding the astronaut brains, because obviously he took them. So at least we know that since there's the astronaut brains that Blaine wants so desperately, because that's $1 million for him, which actually, if it's $200,000 a pop, it should be more than that. But at least we know Major is safe for that, because Blaine wants those brains.
Yeah, but
it's
Major
not
going to
be an instant kill and use his brains.
Major will not tell them where the brains are, because the brains are with Liv, who promised Major to test them to see whether or not they were actually human. So Major is going to try to protect Liv, even though she technically doesn't need protecting, but he doesn't know that. And so it's not going to be sunshine and daisies in the Major camp, so.
No. Well, and I think Ravi's going to find the video.
Yeah.
His goodbye video.
And he's going to freak out.
Yeah. And he can go to Liv, and Liv's got the brains. And so I think we're going to have kind of a confluence here with all that. But we have something else that happened. And that does involve Major, and that Major hears and is privy to. And here's where I do want to do a little bit of a shout out to one of our listeners, Thomas Townley, at King Townley, did mention something that I had been thinking last week as well. By the way, what happened to the storyline with Liv's brother? Which I had been thinking last week too. It's like, hey, this was several weeks ago that Mom picked up the application, and we're thinking that Evan is now going to be put in peril. And did they forget about this? I'm sorry, iZombie writers. I should have more faith in you. Kind of like the Sleepy Hollow writers. Right when I start asking those questions, you answer it. Because we have Evan coming back in to turn in the application. It's not a very good time. Oh, your emergency contact, Liv Moore. At the coroner's office, huh? Yeah, I do have a job for you. All the while, Major is overhearing this was going to be his brother-in-law.
Yeah.
And Major knows what's going on. And Evan is now, we do have Liv's brother in this whole meet cute thing. And we are definitely upping the ante here for the finale.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I can't wait. I can't wait to see where this is going.
I'm just hoping it doesn't go anywhere where any of our main people get hurt or die, because I like them way too much. They have the chemistry. I'm thinking the cast is small enough that we can't have anything really happen to them.
Hmm.
And it is a Zom rom-com drama.
Yeah.
So I hopefully we won't have anything
we
really
will
happen
have
to it.
Our fingers crossed.
Because next week we do have the season finale. Blaine's World. Party time. Excellent. It says in the first season of iZombie comes to a close as Liv is left with a major life decision to make. Does Liv stay a zombie or has Ravi found the cure? Meanwhile, Major finds himself in a major pickle. I don't want to give up more. I have more of a description of next week, but it is the finale. I don't want to do too much. So we can theorize a little bit. Has Ravi found a cure? Is Liv going to have to choose between being cured or staying a zombie
yes,
to protect the
yes.
one she loved? Is Major in major danger? Is he in that major pickle? Is Evan okay? Is Evan safe? I mean, I'm just mentioning, hopefully our cast is so small that none of them are in danger, but is Evan safe?
They're not going to kill Liv's brother. Not just yet. It's the first season. He's going to be around, hopefully, maybe. But I don't care enough to, you know, care. He doesn't, so...
Oh, he's a cute little fresh-faced kid. Hopefully he does stay around. And
he's creepy,
it would be
and
interesting
he's
with him.
Going through Peyton's underwear drawer. I do not care about him if he dies.
Oh, you are heartless.
Yes,
Your
I am.
Your heart is black.
It took you 12 weeks to... Notice, hello.
Now, I knew that.
I am evil.
Just was hoping that you weren't that black. He's a cute little, fresh-faced little kid who's a good brother to Liv, you know, supposedly. We'll see. And an interesting wrinkle there, because now we do have Blaine and Major, and Blaine and Evan, and Blaine is, he's no longer on the outskirts anymore. He does have his ways in the story, so I think it'll be interesting for season two.
Mm.
But first, we have to do the season finale, so.
Next week.
But before we can move on to that episode, I have to know, on the Sci-Fi for Chicks Eye Zombie Hotness Scale, where does this episode rate for you, Alex?
For me, it was a strong 9. When Lowell went away to have his own TV show, I kind of disconnected from the show a little. And ever since then, it was once again slowly rising in the rating. As you can probably tell if you listen week to week. And right now, it's back to the high 9. It's a strong habanero.
Oh.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. It would probably be a 10 if Lowell was in it. I'm just saying. But without it, it's a 9.
It had some really brilliant, fun moments. One that I did not mention. Can I tell you that moment when they first see the band? In the storage unit, and Clive flashes his badge, and the one guy goes running and gets pulled back because he's still attached. That was just a really great, hilarious, laugh-out-loud moment. In the middle of all of this other really deep, intense stuff, I'm liking how they're mixing in this light, funny stuff with really deep, dark things. So I think it was really brilliantly done. It's the penultimate episode, and I really like it. It is a solid piri-piri for me, which is an 8. And that seems low, but that's because I can also tell this is definitely... You know, it used to be you didn't really have the penultimate episodes. It was just... There's only one more episode left in the season after this.
Yeah.
But this one is such a setup for the next one that... Saying it's a solid 8 is actually a really good thing, because it is so solidly hot piri-piri. And I love piri-piri. It's a wonderful hot. But it is so solid there with it that it perfectly, I think, is setting up our finale, which could blow our scale. I have a feeling it could be something that really blows our hotness scale all to pieces. But I just can't rate it a 9 or a 10 just because it's a very solid storytelling with these great elements. But it didn't surprise me other than Peyton. The Peyton thing was so out of left field, I just don't know how to rate it.
We'll see.
So I'm a solid 8. Peri-peri.
Nice.
And you're habanero?
Yeah.
You were habanero? Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Okay. So habanero and peri-peri. It's still very hot.
It is.
Still a
yeah.
very hot episode. We'd like to know how you would rate this episode on the iZombie hotness scale. So tell us what your pepper would be. We really want to know. We have one more episode. We'll be back next week for Blaine's World, episode 13. And we do have a little bit of news. CW has announced their fall schedule. And iZombie, you don't have to wait for a mid-season replacement. While we don't have the official dates that the show will be returning, it is saying that iZombie will be returning in October on Tuesday nights at 9 o'clock, right after The Flash. So you're not going to have to wait too incredibly long for the finale. The finale is going to be in June, the 6th month. It'll be back in October, the 10th month. So you only have 4 months to wait for season 2 of iZombie. That's pretty good news to hear.
It is. And knowing CW, since The Flash is going to come back in October, it's going to be a good wait. You know, mm-hmm. It's not 3 years between seasons mm-hmm. like some TV shows that I'm not going to mention.
They're definitely stepping it up because they are saying that in the final episodes, those closest to Liv are thrust into mortal danger and she'll be forced to make the ultimate sacrifice to save them. There will be heartbreaking consequences, and as the dust settles, we'll see that nothing in Liv's partially dead life will ever be the same. That's what they're saying for the final episodes of this season, and we only have one left. So I'd say get ready for, like I said, this last episode could really blow our hotness scale off the charts.
We'll see.
Totally off the charts. Thank you, Alex, so much for joining me for this episode of iZombie.
Thank you.
We look forward to having you guys all back here next week and want to hear what you think about iZombie and this season and how hot it is and how much we're waiting for Robert and Malcolm and Raul to go shirtless, because Robert Buckley did say Ravi's shirtless scene is coming up and it will be epic. Do not disappoint.
Oh, now my expectations are high.
We'll see you next week. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi For Me Radio.